I'd like to call the order of the meeting of the Early Childhood Finance and Policy Committee. Members, we have two bills up, and then we have the presentation on the potential federal funding for the home visiting programs. I know the commissioner is going to be here testifying on the second bill, and she needs to leave by 5, so we're going to have to go through the first one a little bit quickly. Why don't we see if we can get the minutes passed here first? Anybody over there, Representative Mack?
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the minutes.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Mack moves approval of the minutes for March 11th. Is there any discussion? Okay. Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No. Okay.
Motion prevails and the minutes are approved. And with that, we will have. We will have the first bill, which is House File 3225. Representative Greiling is going to come up and chair.
And I will have the table.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I saw Representative Rosenthal presenting a bill in another committee, so our vice chair is not present.
Yes.
Okay, welcome, Representative Slawick, if you would like to move your bill.
Thank you, Chair Greiling. I would like to move House File 3225 be rolled in.
Representative Slawick moves that House File 3225 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Slawick.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is a bill about child care assistance provider rates modified. I'm going to talk a little bit about the bill, and then I have several testifiers. I have Susie Brown from Child Care Works and a couple of folks that are working in the field. We'll come up in shifts here. Why is this bill needed, members? The Child Care Assistance Program right now is a state and federally funded program that helps low-income working parents pay for child care, as you know. ParentAware is a pilot QRS system being studied in preparation for a statewide QRS system. Most incentives for parents in the QRS system service areas are gone, yet more providers seek to get rated and are receiving higher ratings. So 354 providers are participating in ParentAware, less than half, 162 are accredited. So for accredited programs, they get an accreditation bonus. What this bill does is it allows providers who are not currently accredited and who have received a rating of 3 or 4 from ParentAware to also receive an additional 15% rating increase from the basic CCAP rate. So basically adding that to the system. Basic information on CCAP, I think you all know, members, that the reimbursement rate is the payment the state makes to child care providers who provide care for families receiving child care assistance. Reimbursement rates for child care providers were frozen in 2003 at the 2001 rates. When you think about that, this is 2010, so it's been a long time. Although originally meant to be frozen only through one biennium, they have remained essentially frozen ever since. Since then, rates were increased by 1.75% 1 year and 6% the following year, but the state's reimbursement rates remain well below the market rate. This creates a significant deterrent for child care providers to provide care for CCAP kids, and you're going to see in one case how a provider is making that happen. So I'd like him to proceed with his testimony. Oh, wait, we're going to go this way first.
Okay.
We're going this way, and okay. Then you will hear from him.
Thank you very much, Representative Slawick. Ms. Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm just going to offer a brief comments in support of this bill before you hear from the providers. My name is Susie Brown. I'm the Executive Director of Child Care Works. We're a statewide organization, a coalition that's working to develop public policy that supports access, affordability, and quality in child care. Child Care Works is in full support of House File 3225 because it begins the process of aligning the Child Care Assistance Program funds to quality programs, and it can serve as a model for how child care assistance program funds can be layered into a quality rating and improvement system. As you all know, ParentAware is a pilot project of the QRIS in Minnesota. Child Care Works is in full support of a fully functional statewide QRIS that rewards providers, both center and family-based providers, for the quality they provide as they move up the steps or the stars in the system. House File 3225 provides a 15% rate differential for attaining a 3 or 4 star rating in the Parent Aware system. As the CCAP base rate continues to decline in relation to market rates, this 15% differential earned for the quality they provide could be the difference between staying in business or continuing to provide high-quality care. This bill does not present a perfect long-term solution, as it rewards 3 and 4 stars at the same level, consistent with other parent-aware incentives. We would like to eventually see, in a statewide quality rating and improvement system, a higher rate for each star, creating incentives to move to the highest level of quality. Next, you'll hear from two providers, one home and one center-based, who will show you how this differential could be of benefit to their program and the families they serve. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Huber.
Hi, my name is Mike Huber. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. As I said, my name is Mike Huber. I'm a teacher for Seward Child Care Center, which is in Minneapolis. We're a child care center that serves about 40 families, and I'm here to speak in support of House File 3225. Our center is part of the Parent Aware pilot program currently. We just got our initial rating of 3-star, and we have a few months to improve, hopefully to become a 4-star center. Our child care center is not fancy. Most of our furniture is decades old, including a few tables that are over 50 years old. We got them from the Minneapolis schools when they were throwing them out 30 years ago. We have one laptop computer that we share both for administrative purposes and classroom purposes. We aren't spending a lot of money on, you know, these shiny new things. We are spending our money investing in teachers and teacher quality. In the past year, as part of Parent Aware, we've invested about $1,500 of our own money for training for teachers specific to Parent Aware needs. We do about $4,800 of other training for teachers, but this is specifically for to hopefully get the 4-star rating. We also have spent about $500 in money for facilities improvement. And we're hoping that after the year-long process, we will be a 4-star rating. Now, we are proud of the Parent Aware rating that we have currently, and hopefully we'll be proud of the 4-stars as well. But it does cost more money. And we are a nonprofit. We already operate barely covering expenses. There's really not a big financial cushion. Currently, the tuition we have covers these expenses, but parents who receive CCAP, that money doesn't cover what we already do and what we're continuing to improve upon. The other parents have agreed to pay a higher tuition to cover the CCAP funding. Essentially, people on CCAP in 2003, were a parent cooperative. The parents voted that anyone receiving CCAP, they're capped at what they'll get reimbursed for, and the other parents get a tuition increase each year. And just last year, they had a 5% increase. So essentially, these families are helping fund the CCAP families. And as we move up on the rating scale and hopefully become a 4-star, our expenses will be even more. So obviously, increased CCAP funding would help us enormously, because at some point, the parents won't be able to cover that funding, and we want to keep our quality up there. Only about 10% of our families currently are receiving CCAP, so it's not affecting us as badly right now. Other times we have more people receiving that funding, and that would really strain us. So I support House File 3225 for two basic reasons. The first is economic. It would help child care centers like ours, as well as family care providers, and without it, it is possible that we would go under. I don't think we would try to get rid of the quality we've already invested in. We'd probably go under before we would decrease the quality of our center. If we did that, all the parents we serve would need child care, and they'd be scrambling for it. And, of course, everyone who works for the child care center would also be scrambling for jobs, looking for our own child care. So it affects all of us. And obviously, anytime a business goes under, it affects jobs in our economy. But with child care, it also affects every employer that also has working parents, because their employees now have to find child care. So I think child care, in a way, aside from keeping us open for our own jobs, it's also helping helping allow other people to work in other jobs in the field. And I think it's an essential part of an economic recovery. Here in Minnesota, obviously nationwide as well. Now, the second reason I support this bill is a moral reason, but it has financial implications as well. But basically, we all know that brain development, most brain development occurs in the first 5 years of life. This is the time that it's important to have quality relationships and quality caregiving. A lot of that does come from the parents or other family members, but the reality is that a significant portion of the majority of kids' time in Minnesota is spent with a caregiver. And this quality rating system, I think, is a great way to really increase the quality of those interactions. On the other hand, it costs money. But I do think it's our society's responsibility to make sure those experiences with child care providers are as good as possible. And if it's not for that moral sake alone, we can also look at the economic impact of that. Many of you, I'm sure, are familiar with Art Rolnick from the Federal Reserve, has talked about child care, early childhood development programs as being economic, let me get the right word, economic development initiatives. And just to use one quote from him, the return on investment from early childhood development is extraordinary, resulting in better working public schools, more educated workers, and less crime. It's important to note, though, that the studies he based this statement on were all on low-income children. These are exactly the children that are impacted with CCAP funding. So I think it's doubly important to take those words to heart. So I think this bill is one step forward towards a stronger future for Minnesota's economy and for Minnesota's children. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Mr. Huber. Ms. Thompson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lisa Thompson. I thank you for allowing me to be here today to voice my support for the House File Bill 3225. I'm a family child care provider here in St. Paul. I have been for 17 years. I started with the Parent Aware Program in 88. My first initial rating was a 3, and I have since earned a 4, and I just finished my 2010 rating, and I don't have it yet, but I'm sure it will be a 4.
Sure.
Because of the improvements that I've been encouraged and coached through to make in my program, despite having a degree in early, not early childhood, but elementary education, there are still improvements that I can make. And also the degree did not guarantee me, didn't even allow me, the differential that's allowed on the CCAP program. With me today, I brought one of the many voices that I've often echoed in my testimony in the past. This is Mary Albert.
Thank you, Ms. Thompson. And Ms. Albert.
Yes. Madam Chairman and members of the committee, I want to thank you for allowing me to be here today. And I have started in the Parent Aware Program, too. And I started off with a two, and then I just got my 2010 as a 4-star.
Congratulations.
Wow. All right. Between the two of us,
Ms. Thompson.
Thank you. Between the two of us, we serve many children on CCAP, and we've been very involved in the Parent Aware program and how it is rating family child care providers. There are still some improvements that I have suggested on my list of suggestions for how it relates to family child care. But those are minor compared to the improvements that I've seen, the impact that Parent Aware has had on family child care over the past few years, and the many family child care providers that I've spoken to on this. The improvements that myself and many other providers have worked very hard on in our programs, like Mike has testified on, are not easy and they're not cheap. One of the things that especially affects family child care providers is a lot of the requirements for obtaining a 4-star make the demands on us are very difficult in that we work by ourselves. And the improvement dollars has allowed me to hire a substitute and really help me to keep up with the requirements of Parent Aware, despite working by myself for the most part. One of the other improvements that I've made is I didn't use formal assessment before I started in the Parent Aware program, and I have now started to do that. I always felt in the past that my personal relationship that I'm allowed for in family environment didn't call for me to do a formal assessment and formal conferences. I've been very pleasantly surprised, actually, at the reaction that many families have had in this tool and having formal conferences with them. And Mary would like to speak also to several of the improvements she's made in her program.
Thank you, Ms. Albert.
Yes, ma'am. I just, as being a family child care and being in the Parent Aware program, the premise that I have made in mind was being able to get toys that's safe and quality, be accessible to my children. And also that it also, Lisa just stated about the tool of doing the conference and letting the parents know where the child is at. And so the parents has been very excited about that. And when the children go down to St. Paul school system to get, you know, the three evaluation when they 3 years old, that they see that the improvement that their child have, you know, received in my program. So I'm very excited about being in the program and the house of 3225, what they're going to do.
Thank you very much, Ms. Thompson.
Madam Chair, thank you. And just one other thing that I would like to add in support of this bill is that the force for the program to be successful, I strongly believe that there needs to be incentive and reward and recognition in the work that's involved in obtaining a four-star, as well as the quality that is required for a four-star program. If we're rewarding accredited programs and people with early childhood degrees, I think is partnering, it's hand in hand, that we're also awarding someone who's been through the work and the steps and the quality improvements that are required for a four-star program. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is that the end of your testimony, Representative Slawick?
Yes, it is. I just want to make sure to thank the members. As you know, these are providers, and they are usually getting kids off to parents right now, so we appreciate them coming down. You might remember that Lisa is a TV star. We saw her in the video. We showed it to the committee. Parent Aware, and I thought that was very well done, and appreciate you sharing today as well as sharing in the video your story about QRS and how it's impacted the quality of your child care.
Thank you.
So thank you, Representative Slavik. Questions from members? I have one, if nobody else does. Representative Slawick, given that this fund is capped and now being cut this year, recommendation of the governor, will this then, by paying more for some providers, and deservedly so, you know, with having gone through the process to achieve the quality ratings, and then, you know, that benefits this little kids who are in the child care, but will this then increase the waiting list due to the fact that there's a finite amount of money?
Madam Chair and members, good questions. My understanding is, I always had to bring a bill forward and say we can't fund it, is that this probably won't be funded this year. The idea was to get this bill on the table to let you understand and start to educate the committee about incentives for both providers, as well as, you know, there's other incentives that are needed. But no, I mean, my understanding would be that it would not impact the waiting list, because it would the funds that come for the accreditation will, and we need additional funds to fund this, and we don't have the funds to fund this. So no, it will not.
Thank you very much, and it's always good to have visions for the future, and right. We need to look forward to when we have the amount of money that the little kids deserve. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, and I'm just following up on that question, because the language in the bill already says, I mean, the current language says there's a 15% differential, and all we're doing here, we're not adding any new money, we're just adding the 3 or 4-star rating. So I don't think it costs, it's whether we have enough money overall for any of it, but I don't think that this particular language of adding the 4-star should increase unless we have a number more 4-star rating places than that will get 15%, then maybe it would. I'm trying to think through how it would, but that would be the only way it would.
And Representative Peterson, if it doesn't, if, you know, if it's as you said and it's the same, but they just are classified differently, then I would wonder why we couldn't do it this year. So, but Representative Slawik, maybe
not. You know, we can take another look at it, but to our understanding, it would be about $150,000 potentially this year. We have a couple things happening in this area where we also have, for the accrediting, the groups that are in statute, there's another group that wants to be part of the accrediting group, and we can't do them. Our understanding is because it's another cost, because it does bring in more people that would be eligible. In this case, it brings in more people that would be eligible. So unless we have $150,000, we would not be able to do it, because it would automatically increase the funding. Yeah, and so that would be the issue at this point. I know it's only $150,000, but boy, in this budget this year, we don't have any extra money.
Thank you, Representative Slavik. Any other questions? Any testimony that we haven't heard on the bill, for or against? Great. Any closing comment, Representative Slavik?
Well, Madam Chair and members, I hope we'll consider rolling this in. We'll obviously be looking under every rock for maybe some extra funding where we could do this, because we would really like to, and I think it's good for us to all hear how interested the providers are and how this could help them in their programs and continue to improve their quality. So with that, I hope I renew my motion for House File 3225 to be rolled in for consideration into the Omnibus Early Childhood Finance and Policy Bill.
Thank you very much, Representative Slavik and testifiers. And House File 3225 will be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Chair Greiling, for filling in there. I'll represent Rosenthal. We just missed you. So, a variety of people holding the gavel, so we appreciate it. We understand the Commissioner Easley, I have 5, so she has approximately 3 minutes, and Representative Perez to get your bill heard here. I suppose if she has to sneak out, we'll just have to rely on you and the other department folks. So well, welcome to the committee.
With any luck, this won't take long. I do want to move House File 3670 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the Early Childhood Finance and Policy Omnibus Bill. So I turn it over to the Commissioner.
Madam Chair, and I can stay longer, it's not a problem.
Good. Glad to hear that. I don't think there'll be a lot of questions, but just in case.
Good. Thank you. Well, this is a very short bill. Part of this bill reflects the payment deferral, the aid payment shift, and putting that into law so that in the future this will mesh with the other piece of legislation that gives us the direction to pay back this aid payment shift as we receive surpluses. So there's a process for doing that. So as you look on the first few pages, what you'll be looking at is just the effect of that aid payment shift. You will see that in 2010 it's reduced, and then you see it's reduced to a 73-27 type of aid payment shift. Then the second thing that you will notice is there are two initiatives that received a small reduction, and that was the kindergarten readiness assessment, and then also the Parents Know website, and they were reduced by a very small amount of money. And I know there's been some questions about what will that do to those programs. We have an intern that helps to work on the school readiness program, on the website, and the intern helps with the study, and there will be less hours for the intern to work on that. We won't be able to update the website as quickly as we would like to, but we continue to work on updating it and putting new videos and new information for our parents on that website. It just won't happen as quickly as we would like. So that is basically the areas. The school readiness program will continue, certainly. It won't be very much affected by the reduction at all. And the rest of that, as you can see, is pretty straightforward information for you.
Thank you. Members, are there any questions? Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner Segrin, can you just clarify, is this just putting into statute the mimicking of the shift, or are we actually turning this into the shift, or is that something that's only in the K-12 domain and not early ed, if I'm being clear?
Mr. Segrin?
Madam Chair and members, this just reflects what happens to each of these programs with the 7327 shift. So that's the appropriations and how they're affected with the 7327 shift.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just a quick follow-up. Would this then kind of put the shift into statute in a way such that the provision that requires the repayment of a shifted education fund to kind of occur according to the tiers in statute then as well?
Mr. Segrin.
Madam Chair, yes, this reflects that position. And Madam Chair, also I wanted to also tell you that this the reductions in some parts of this also reflect a 3% cut in our agency budget too. So there's some things in here that are reflected that way.
Mr. Segrin, does that reflect the unallotment or?
No, Madam Chair, that is the that's the direction that we have to follow as far as further reductions in our budget. So those are reflected in our in these particular areas. It's the 3% reduction it affects our school readiness program, as I said, and the Parents Know website.
Okay. Any questions, members? Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Segrin, I'm wondering why a cut to the department would come out of the early childhood programs.
Madam Chair, because they're part of our budget.
Commissioner Segrin, okay, Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Segrin, I know that, but when we have cuts to the department in K-12, they come out of the department, not the formula or any of the other components of our budget. So I'm wondering why then in early childhood they come out of school readiness, early childhood family education, et cetera.
Mr. Segrin?
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Madam Chair, the study is a line item. It's not the school readiness program. If I misspoke, I apologize. It's the study, the school readiness, and that's a line item within our agency budget. And so because it is part of our agency budget and there's an appropriation there that's a line item, that's why we get the 3% reduction. That's why we're required to take it there. And the same thing with the Parents Know website. That's part of our agency budget. It's not kind of part of a general appropriation. Hope I'm explaining that well. It's not like the school readiness program that is part of, you know, the general budget. These are specific line items within our agency.
Representative Garland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I don't need to belabor the point, but I guess I don't have a spreadsheet here. All I have is this, the text of this bill. So it's not an across-the-board 3% cut, then, out of everything.
No, Madam Chair, when you're looking at these, I'm sorry, Madam Chair and Representative Greiling, when you're looking at these appropriations, that reflects the 7327. But when you look at the, is it Subdivision 6?
Representative Greiling, there is a spreadsheet. Yeah.
And Subdivision 7, those are specific department appropriations or line items, and those reflect the 3% reduction.
Okay.
But the rest of it then is the 73.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Segrin, speaking of Subdivision 7, our understanding that even though there's a reduction, it's not going to affect the quality of the kindergarten entrance assessment initiative, that the assessment will remain basically the same. I think, is that what you were talking about with the interns'
Manager,
hours?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So, Commissioner Segrin, the department is committed to assessing. It's probably going on right now, what month is this?
It's labor.
It's not the fall anymore, but you hopefully did the assessment last fall.
Manager,
and
yes.
And plan to do it.
Yes, Madam Chair,
coming as
have
well.
Have that commitment, absolutely.
Okay, thank you. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is maybe really minor, but Ms. Adrian's on line 10 of the spreadsheet. It shows $1,000 each year from the governor's recs, but the bill seems like it shows $2,000. Am I just misreading the bill somehow, maybe?
Ms. Adrians?
Madam Chair and Representative Downey, I was wondering if someone would notice that. What I did was I reflected there were two things. There was an unallotment that the governor did to the program that was $1,000 worth. And so I had already included that in the base, and then the $1,000 is on top of the program change.
Ms. Adrian, so tell us about that unallotment is reflected in the tails.
The ratification of the unallotment, I understand, is in the governor's recommendations, but that wouldn't show up in these numbers in the bill. That wouldn't happen until fiscal years 2012 and 2013. You'll see it on the spreadsheet if you look at lines 10 and lines 12. Oh, I'm sorry, some of the lines got duplicated. The first line 10 and the first line 12. So under years 2012 and 2013, and it's $1,000 each year for Educate Parents Partnership. And then for kindergarten entrance assessment, it's $7,000 each year. And those would be ongoing.
Any other questions? Okay. Representative Nornes, any closing comments?
No, Madam Chair, I don't believe so. But I'll renew my motion.
Okay. Thank you.
I move the 3670 be laid over for possible inclusion in the early childhood finance and policy omnibus bill.
So moved. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, members, next we are going to have a presentation on potential federal funding for the home visiting program. Joe Briggs and Jane Kretzman and Maggie Diebel. While they are coming down, members, I wanted to talk a little bit about the schedule for next week. On Monday the 22nd, we're going to post the delete all at 4 o'clock on the committee webpage. So we're coming out with our bill. On Tuesday the 23rd, staff will go through the bill, and we'll be taking public testimony, so that's next Tuesday, a week from today. On Wednesday the 24th, the amendments are due by 4 o'clock. So if we want to note any amendments by 4 o'clock on Wednesday the 24th, and on Thursday the 25th, we will take amendments and vote on the bill. As members recall, we're then headed into our sort of Easter Passover break shortly after that, so we want to get this turned around and out before that. Are there any questions on the schedule or how that's going to work? Okay. I have to tell you, it's not a huge bill without, obviously, any funding this year and being in a non-budget year, so we will be presenting it next Monday. All right, good. Any questions? All right, good. Thank you. Well, we will proceed with the presentation. Welcome to the committee. I'm not sure who wants to start.
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jill Briggs. I am the Community Health Services Administrator and the Public Health Director in Chisago County, so greetings from the north. As you know, home visiting is not funded in this committee. However, when we look at Minnesota communities, they require a robust continuum of effective programs for children and families in need of early childhood services, including home visiting. We work together with our early childhood partners, and we really do work together in support of our state's youngest citizens. We'd like to thank you for the opportunity to speak with the committee and provide a brief update about the coalition. And more importantly, our state partners are here to really provide for you some information about potential federal support to support home visiting for families in Minnesota. As I was preparing these comments for tonight, I have to tell you that I smiled because I ran across some notes dated January 22, 2009. You may not remember, you see lots of people, but I was here before you a year ago talking about the same topic, which is home visiting. My family seems to think I'm somewhat passionate about the topic. Since 2009, the Minnesota Coalition for Targeted Home Visiting has continued to have one purpose. We still have our purpose. And our purpose is to secure stable sources of public and private funding so targeted intensive home visiting is available statewide for high-risk parents on a voluntary basis. Lots of words there, but our purpose continues the same. I wanted to assure you that it's there. In the last year, the Home Visiting Coalition for Targeted Home Visiting has continued to expand our membership and develop really a very neat, rich array of partnerships and stakeholders. An example is I'm from governmental public health, and my colleague over here, who's going to speak in just a minute, is Jane Kretzman. Jane comes from the world of foundations. And Jane is going to introduce herself now and share with you a bit about that rich array of coalition partners. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jill.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm a senior program officer at the Minnesota Community Foundation, where I direct a comparatively new initiative to improve the health and developmental outcomes of infants and toddlers ages 0 to 3 in Minnesota, North, and South Dakota. As I mentioned, I co-chair the statewide coalition for targeted home visiting, whose roots are deep. The path to the coalition, my path in particular, came through a grant that I worked on when I was at the Bush Foundation for 20 years before this, where the boards of commissioners of some of the metropolitan counties voted to eliminate boundaries between the counties in order to serve high-risk, first-time expectant and new parents in a program of high-quality home visiting. The goal of these county administrators and commissioners was to take targeted voluntary home visiting statewide, and thus the coalition was born. As the coalition was forming, we aimed to create a big tent, large enough to embrace the multiple approaches and disciplines that characterize home visiting in Minnesota, and particularly at the local level. Our membership includes representatives from local public health agencies, the Minnesota Visiting Nurse Association, the Minnesota Association for Family and Early Childhood Education, Early Head Start, the Nurse Family Partnership, health maintenance organizations, county agencies, private organizations like Way to Grow and Parents as Teachers, private foundations and advocates. We also have a group of advisors drawn from state agencies, Minnesota Department of Health, Human Services and Education in particular, and a special work group that's dedicated to studying provider reimbursement and possible outcome measures for services delivered through home visiting. Our aim as a coalition is to have stable sources of funding for high-quality home visiting that is offered on a voluntary and targeted basis. So I'm going to call my colleague, Maggie Diebel, from the Department of Health.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Maggie Diebel, and I'm the Director of the Community and Family Health Division at the Minnesota Department of Health. And I'm here to provide you with a briefing on the potential federal funding for home visiting that is included in both the Senate and the House versions of the health care reform legislation. That legislation, as you know, is pending. I've also been asked to describe what actions have been taken and are being taken by the state agencies to best position Minnesota to successfully garner any of that pending funding that may be made available to the states. So first I'd like to briefly describe the current home visiting program that is administered by the Department of Health under Minnesota Statute 145A-17, which was enacted in 2001 and amended in 2007. And I think this will help to provide some context and understanding how well positioned Minnesota is to receive additional funding for home visiting in the state. I'd like to refer you to the one-page handout that you should have. It's Family Home Visiting Program. I hope you have this in your packet. And I'm just going to touch on a few of the highlights. Another thing that I would like to refer you to, I didn't bring copies for everyone, but we submitted in January the Family Home Visiting Program Report to the Minnesota Legislature, which should be available to you through the Legislative Library and also is available online in the Minnesota Department of Health. So I think both Jill and Jane touched on the importance of home visiting in the state. It really has been shown to be an effective strategy to improve the health and well-being of families. It has demonstrated decrease in child abuse and neglect, decreased alcohol and tobacco use during pregnancy, increased breastfeeding rates, reductions in subsequent pregnancies, increased labor force participation by parents, and increased family income. Under the current program, MDH administers grants to 53 community health boards with approximately $8 million in TANF funding available annually through a funding formula. And an additional $1 million goes to the tribes through the Eliminating Health Disparities Grant Program. MDH retains $498,000 for training and technical assistance and $248,000 for targeted evaluation. It's important to note that at the local level, other funding is also brought to the table to support home visiting, the Title V block grant funds, the Local Public Health Act dollars, and other local levy dollars. As you can see on the handout, statistics show that the need for targeted home visiting support in Minnesota is great. The statute specifically identifies the factors that place families at risk, and therefore should be targeted for services, including such issues as being an adolescent parent, having a history of alcohol or drug abuse, a history of child or domestic abuse, having insufficient financial resources to meet family needs, homelessness, long-term welfare dependency, etc. So the goal of family home visiting in Minnesota at its core is prevention, to foster healthy beginnings, improve pregnancy outcomes, promote school readiness, prevent child abuse and neglect, reduce juvenile delinquency, promote positive parenting and resiliency in children, and promote family health and economic self-sufficiency for children and families. Again, the approach is targeted. I think Joe pointed that out very well, and requires that home visitors be trained and must include a public health nurse assessment. We have a variety of home visiting models and curricula that are used here in Minnesota, and it's really depending upon the needs of the families. During the first year of the program, we work closely with local public health and tribal governments to carry out the requirements that are outlined in the statute, setting up systems to train family home visitors and effectively evaluate the program. To provide guidance to the department for statewide implementation, we established a steering committee, and it included many of the stakeholders that are also participating in the coalition. Local public health directors, community health administrators and supervisors from the metro and around the state, tribal government through the Office of Minority and Multicultural Health, the Local Public Health Association, the Minnesota Department of Education, both Head Start and ECFE, representation there, the Department of Human Services, County Human Services, Healthy Start, and Ready for K. Under the statute, we were required to establish training requirements and evaluation measures to be able to determine the impact of the program. So we convened training and evaluation work groups as well to accomplish this charge. These broader stakeholder groups really have been instrumental in ensuring that our home visiting programs are effective and responsive in meeting the diverse needs of the families across Minnesota, both in terms of the clients served as well as the varying capacities at the local level to implement the program. In the legislative report, again, not in front of you, but you'll find information on the data collected during the first 6 months of program implementation. And this provides baseline information against which we will measure our future accomplishments. I also want to point out that in this regard, we have really an ongoing challenge in terms of our existing IT infrastructure, that it really does not support this effort very effectively. I want to mention also that we have a federal grant from ACF, the Administration for Children and Families, that supports establishing systems for evidence-based program implementation. It was originally funded at $500,000 per year, but now in the third year of implementation, it was reduced to $150,000 in anticipation of this federal funding. So in summary, I just want to say that through the support of state funds, we've been able to establish a pretty solid foundation and the systems necessary for expanding home visiting in the state. So I'd be happy to answer any questions about the current program before I talk about the pending federal funding for home visiting.
Can you, Representative Riley has a question. I have a question. Can you just recap, you or gave the funding statistics of how it was split out. You gave three figures. Your sort of base funding, your evaluation funding, and your, can you give us those figures again?
Yes, we have about $8 million that goes out through a formula to our 53 community health boards, an additional $1 million that goes through the eliminating health disparities, $498,000 for MDH support for training, technical assistance, et cetera, and then $249,000 for targeted evaluation.
And your evaluation, I don't know if I heard this correctly, you said isn't part of a legislative report, but it's not, you don't have it yet, or it's in process or something? Or is there somewhere we can access the evaluation?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, yes. Information now about the evaluation system, the process that we have used to establish the system. As I mentioned, we set up a steering committee that identified the outcomes that we would use around the state to be able to determine the impact of the program. And that was one of the things that was identified in the statute that we needed to do. So we have an existing data system that is used by community health boards to report to the Department of Health. It's called the PPMRS, which is the program and planning monitoring reporting system that we use for other things, such as the things that our community health boards are required to report on related to their local Public Health Act funding.
So how do people like me is it in lay terms at all? An evaluation typically is done for effectiveness?
Well, Madam Chair and members of the committee, again, there are a number of outcomes that are articulated, program outcomes, and those are laid out and available for anyone to look at. You can go into the MDH website, and they are all articulated there. If we move on to the federal funding that's coming down the pike, I have provided for you a summary of that funding, and in that it talks about some of the outcomes that are going to be anticipated that we're going to have to respond to for the federal funding as well, if that would be helpful to you.
We'll go to Representative Grimes' question. Basically, I'm trying to see if your programs are effective and how you're rating them and that type of thing, just like we do in our other programs. So it's I think it's more complicated than I think, but yes, we'll get to that next, but I'd like to see answer Representative Greiling, have her ask her question. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the testifier or any of the testifiers, we have the early childhood officer, or whatever it is, that Representative Peterson is proposing that we've been discussing in this committee, and we have the overlap with Health and Human Services budgets and this committee. And we heard last week that I heard anyway, that the mental health, children's mental health wanted to stay in Health and Human Services, and but yet child care, you know, would make so much sense to have it be in this office or whatever. So I'm wondering if there's any company line on the family home visiting program as far as your thoughts. When we were children, families, and learning, were you in that department? And if you were or weren't, what's your thought on not being in the Department of Health?
Stable. Madam Chair and Representative Greiling, I haven't been in the department long enough to know about the history there. I could certainly follow up with you on that. We're in the process, really, of looking at that legislation and talking about what the implications might be, and we haven't taken a position on that.
Ms. Briggs, do you have some input?
Yes, I'll have a little input, Madam Chair, members of the committee. There's always been home visiting. Meg is absolutely right that there's home visiting that happens through health, and there's home visiting that happens through education. And I would say that it's okay to be in different departments. It's how we link together as a home visitor. In the olden days when I did home visiting, I went with the ECFE teacher. So you can have home visiting in different departments. We're linked by virtue of our family and the discussions we have between ourselves. So I would say it's not an either or. The richness comes from all types of different disciplines. That would be my little bias. But from a family's perspective, when they want your help, I can honestly tell you it wasn't as important if you were a nurse or a social worker. It was, would you please just help me? And that's the bottom line.
Thank you very much.
Representative Graham, if I had a wish list, not that anybody's asking me how I would structure this committee, but if there wasn't an office, or we'll see what happens with that, is when you teach a curriculum on early childhood, all of these things are in the curriculum. So really, you should have an early childhood committee that should have the funding, perhaps, for all things that covered early childhood, including maybe special education for early kids. I mean, I don't know how splitting that out is a whole other issue, but, you know, that's something potentially this committee could give some input to, and something that our state struggles a little bit with. We had a bill in K-12 policy this morning about identification of young kids and their special needs, and if everybody could do what they wanted, it would be very interesting to have home visiting in here. It would also be interesting to have early childhood special ed in here, as well as some other things. But, or maybe that would be part of Representative Peterson's office. Yes, so we could all build our dreams. I know that the Children's Caucus would like everything related to children in sort of one committee and one funding structure. And you think of that would be huge, just huge. So, Representative Downey, and then Representative Peterson.
Just a follow up to this point, and that was, even though Sue wanted to keep the grants at where they were because they were so well situated there. We also have been getting, you know, the idea of requests that we also keep mental health as an entity collaborating with this office of early ed. So they're not wanting to take it out. But, you know, again, it doesn't have to be situated there. You're collaborating, and the office is meant to be, an entity that collaborates with all these groups to assure that we have good early childhood programs. So, just a piece.
Okay. Representative Downey?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just observing how bureaucracies grow as we have the conversation. Actually, my question for any of the testifiers, was there any connection with the home visiting program at the Department of Health with the mentoring component of the MELF pilots?
Ms. Bird?
I don't know. I've not had that experience, but it may exist in other counties, so I'll speak just from Chisago County. I'm not aware of it. Jane, do you have anything?
I would just say that the way that the mentoring was structured in MELF, it was more of a family coaches. It was not nurses. It was a different strategy. So,
any other questions? Okay. Well, if you want to proceed now with telling us about the federal funds. Now, I just to clarify, I know you're going to get into this, but so this could be part of the health care bill that's going to be passed shortly. Very, very shortly, we think, perhaps.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I think what we've heard is that it's this week again.
Yes. It is.
So I think everyone is certainly watching that closely, as we all have been for quite a long time. I'd like to just refer you to another handout that you should have received. It is a summary of the a summary and comparison of the House and Senate bills that was compiled by the Pew Center on the States. And I think this was does a really nice side-by-side job of what are in each of the versions of the bill that we are hearing is going to be included in the federal legislation. We're very excited about the possibility of additional funding coming into the state for home visiting programs. At the same time, we are mindful of the fact that the health care reform legislation is pending, as we've been saying, and we don't know which of the versions, if either, will be enacted. We don't know whether it will be a competitive process to get the money or it will be dispersed through a formula. And while the proposed funding levels are encouraging, which we'll walk through in a minute, overall we're keeping in mind that the allocations to the states and territories would, even in the unlikely event of equitable distribution of the funding across the states, it would be less than $2 million in the first year and less than $8 million in the fifth year. This is in the Senate version, and half that amount in the House version. And while these amounts would certainly help to move us toward better outcomes for our families most at risk, I think keeping the potential funding levels in perspective relative to the needs in our state will help us to better plan for implementation should this legislation move forward. I was in Washington, D.C. last week at a meeting where senior managers from the Maternal Child Health Bureau of HRSA and also from the Administration for Children and Families presented, and they said that they were really closely tracking the proceedings, as all of us are. And whatever the outcome, they are really committed to working together. And as you'll see in a minute, the proposed avenues for moving the funding are either through the Maternal Child Health Title V block grant, which MDH administers, or through ACF Title IV, which the Department of Human Services administers. We in the state agencies are certainly of like mind. We're committed to working together regardless of which mechanism the federal government chooses to move this legislation through. And in fact, we met just earlier today, MDH, DHS, and the Department of Education to talk about our approach to ensuring a responsiveness to whatever requests for applications the feds issue. We also talked about ensuring that we're aligning our objectives, because I think, as Jill said, ultimately our goal is to serve these most at-risk families. And so we want to make sure that our, as I said, our goals are aligned and our respective resources are aligned as well. So we're confident that we have in place the systems that will enable us to submit a successful application. And these include, we have productive working relationships among the state agencies. We have solid working relationships with our local partners, with the local public health association, the home visiting coalition. I mentioned that we had formed a family home visiting steering committee that includes many of the key stakeholders, but certainly could be expanded to include more depending on what we see in this federal legislation. We've established reporting systems, as I mentioned, that will allow us to collect, process, and outcome data to tell us whether or not we're meeting our objectives, and really how we can improve, because that's part of what data should be used for, to tell us how well we're doing. The measures we've established for our current programs are very consistent with those that we're seeing in the proposed legislation, and again, we'll walk through that in a minute. In rolling out the Minnesota Home Visiting Program, we gained a wealth of information about the populations at risk who will benefit from home visiting, as well as about our capacity to meet those needs. We use a variety of home visiting models in the state, and again, Jill alluded to that, several evidence-based programs, some very promising practices, and others that have not been as rigorously evaluated. We are currently undertaking a needs assessment that is required every 5 years for our Title V block grant funding. Not only are we, again, garnering information that will help to inform any needs assessment that's required by the feds, but we have set up a process that will allow us to quickly respond to any such requirement that would come through the federal funding. So if you want to just look at this summary, the Pew summary, I'm not going to walk through the whole thing, but for the Senate version of the bill, it provides $1.5 billion over 5 years, and I outlined a little bit how that might play out. They're requiring evidence-based program models. Again, when we were in Washington, there were five what they're calling evidence-based programs that they profiled in this meeting. Healthy Families America, Nurse Family Partnership, Parents as Teachers, National Parent-Child Home Program, and Home Instruction for Parents of Preschool Youngsters, also known as HIPPE. HIPPE is the only program that currently is not implemented in Minnesota. So again, these are examples of the kinds of programs that they would be looking for us to implement. And again, it says in bullet number two that a needs assessment would be required. We're not sure how that would roll out and the timing of it, whether they would allocate the funding first or make the awards first and do the needs assessment. But again, we feel like we're well positioned to move very quickly to be responsive to that. The House version authorizes $750 million, again, over 5 years, and you can see how that would be rolled out in this early, at least, proposed legislation. If you turn the page, it provides additional information about and more specific information about what's included in each of the bills. Again, I don't think I will take the time to walk through that, but if any of you have any questions about how this is laid out that I could answer, I'd be happy to do that. Again, as I mentioned, MDH is currently the administrator of the Title V MCH block grant, and DHS administers the Title IV funding. So we're all waiting to see how this federal funding will be rolled out. And again, regardless of how the federal funding comes down the pike, we are going to work together to be responsive to the solicitation that they issue. And with that, again, I'd be happy to take any more questions that I could answer or any of us could.
No, I have a question. Race for the Top, to the Top, was a competitive grant program from the feds, obviously, that selected certain states. In early childhood, there was strategic planning money that was granted to all states, and virtually for a certain amount. Is this, are all states going to get this, and it's a matter of how much, or is it going to be targeted towards certain states?
Again, we don't know. I think the way that it's going to be rolled out is yet to be seen. It could be a competitive process where they intend to get it to as many states as possible. It may be more targeted. It may be a funding formula. I think we're all waiting to see how that's going to play out. One thing that's very encouraging to us in the Senate version of the bill is that there is a set-aside for states to use to rigorously evaluate those programs that haven't been deemed the best practice or evidence-based as of yet, but they're very promising practices. There is some money set aside for planning in the first 6 months in the Senate version as well. So again, we're still waiting to see how this is going to play out, and it could do so in a number of ways.
If this is a formula-based program, we hear out there that there are other groups that would be like to be included in it, and at least the way our home visiting statute is structured. I'm not sure if they would meet the evidence-based or not. That's a question I would have, but are you going to look at other programs in Minnesota that would like access to these funds, or would, yeah, I guess you'd be looking at that, or if you'd keep the current funding formula the way it is and pretty much just implement it, or is it wait and see how it comes out?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, again, I think we have to see what it is that the feds are going to require. We have to be responsive, certainly, to what it is that they're going to be looking for. Again, I think the goal is to ensure that we're bringing the right programs and resources to the table to be able to achieve the outcomes. So it's really not the process, it's not the programs, it's what is it that we can do so that we can really move the dial to support these families who are most at risk so that they can achieve healthy, productive lives.
Specifically, since you're in front of the committee, the criticism is that it's only eligible for public health nursing programs or something.
Well, actually, Madam Chair and members of the committee, we currently have in the statute that there must be a public health nursing assessment, but we have a variety of programs in Minnesota. I think there are 15 different curricula that are used currently in the state.
We should talk about that. Anyway, I'd like to have a further conversation about that. We hear from groups that want access to the monies and aren't having some trouble getting them, and me having some trouble understanding what the issues are. So why don't we have a further conversation? Because if there's going to be more money available, if they can be eligible at some other point, we'd want to obviously get them in if it's possible and workable and works with all the regulations. So, members, any questions? I think this could be very promising with the federal legislation and have money coming down. And we know home visiting is one of the most effective ways of helping our at-risk families and at-risk kids getting off on the right foot for both helping them, the parents and the kids at the same time, which is something we know we don't always do well. We're either helping one or the other, and good to have them at the same time. Any questions? Okay. We'll keep us posted on what's happening. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.